Hello, I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. It's time to join Jill Bevilacqua, who today takes us on a very personal pilgrimage to yet another holy place. It's Fonte Avellana, high up in the Apennine Marches, a place I once visited myself fleetingly, recalling it in a blur of snow and children's voices, my children breaking the austere silence with their snowballing. And a place Jill, on the other hand, has vivid memories of, having been there on pilgrimage time and time again. She shares with us this experience. Stay tuned.
I have come to slake my thirst at this fountain of spirituality. Here, where silence reigns and peace predominates, God speaks to the heart of man.
Pope John Paul II speaking to the monks of Fonte Avellana on September the 5th, 1982, during his visit to the monastery, or as it's still called, the Hermitage of the Holy Cross. Strictly speaking, neither appellation is correct, for in 1325, Fonte Avellana was raised to the dignity of an abbey. The Pope's visit was the culminating event in the celebrations of the millennium of its foundation, though this might have been a score of years later. No one is really sure. But the Council for Avellanite Studies fixed 1980 as an approximate date for the millennium. It could hardly have been a coincidence that this was also the 15th centenary of the birth of St. Benedict. And as one of the monks commented to me happily on my visit the previous year,
"We will celebrate the two anniversaries together. The uncertainty of the date of foundation does not trouble me. Rather, it fills me with a kind of holy pride. You see, it makes me think that our founder was so close to God that, although working in time, he was thinking of the eternal. And for eternity, there are no dates. There is only God, the eternal."
Don Aliprando himself has now entered into that timeless dimension, where, as the words of the psalm puts it, "A thousand years are like yesterday, come and gone, no more than a watch in the night." But for a quarter of a century, he was our joyous host on a number of occasions, when with family or friends I made the pilgrimage to Fonte Avellana. A self-confessed Anglophile, he told us of his friendship with an English hermit who had lived nearby, and who had left in her will a sum of money to be used for hospitality to English pilgrims. So it was that we were often lodged in the bishop's residence, a comfortable and well-appointed suite in the main building of the monastery. At other times, we stayed in the guest house, while in recent years, we've been allotted a monk's cell, duly updated and complete with all mod comms, the only indication of its former use being the name of its occupant in Latin above the door. This innovation is a sign of the greater openness to the world, but is also, sadly, a result of the reduced numbers of the monastic community. But let's go back to the beginnings and discover how it all started. It was towards the end of the first millennium that a world-weary nobleman left his home in Gubbio and, with only one companion, withdrew to the solitude of Fonte Avellana, 2,000 feet up in the Apennine Mountains. With the permission of the local bishop, he built first an oratory and then a small hermitage to house any others who might choose to turn their backs on the world. Some years later, St. Romuald, the wandering reformer and founder of the Camaldolese hermit monks, paid a visit. He decided the place was ideally suited to the hermit life and taught the new recluses his rule. Romuald has been called Father of the Reasonable Hermits, those who live according to a rule. Though no writings of his survive, his teachings were passed on by his disciples.
"Sit in your cell as in a paradise. Cast all memory of the world behind you, and attend to your thoughts as a good fisherman minds the fish."
A thousand years of history confers a character on a place and on its inhabitants, which is not always immediately obvious to the casual visitor. At first sight, Fonte Avellana is the classic oasis of quiet. It stands among woods of ash and maple, in a green valley, surrounded by high mountains, which at Christmas time are covered with snow. Formerly reached only by a rough, unmade road, is not the sort of place you'd come upon unawares. It's too well hidden, which, after all, is how a hermitage should be. Once past the village of Serra Sant'Abbondio, you do indeed leave the world behind you, as the road winds uphill for several miles through woods of oak, ilex or home oak, and hazelnut. And it's the hazelnut, the Avellana, which gives the place its name. The founder, we read, made his home near that spring of pure water which gushes forth at the roots of the hazelnut trees. Soaring above us in the distance, 8,000 feet up, is Mount Catria, undisputed monarch of these wild regions. And there it is at last, the goal of our pilgrimage, Fonte Avellana, spring of the hazelnut trees, fountain of spirituality. As you drive up the steep roadway, you breathe a sigh of contentment. Here, if anywhere, one should find the perfect atmosphere for prayer and meditation. On my first visit, I was taken by a friend who cultivated an ambition to become a hermit herself, and who spent days at a time here before returning to work, spiritually and mentally recharged. But that day happened to be the feast of Saint Albertino, prior of the monastery for 30 years and the most venerated and popular of its many saints. The local population had turned out in force, and the more enterprising merchants had set up their stalls just short at the monastery gates. My companion was horrified. But having lived among the Italians for many years, I was not unduly surprised. It was a perfect May morning, and what better excuse for a picnic than a saint's day? The monks themselves seemed not in the least perturbed by the invasion. "You should have been here on the 1st of May," they told us, laughing, as we scrambled for a place in the overcrowded church. By noon, the sunshine had given way to grey clouds, and as the day went on, it turned to rain. The picnickers were not dismayed, however, and the refreshment room did a roaring trade in hot drinks and the monk's liqueur. By late afternoon, it was raining steadily, and the mountains seemed to be closing in on us. The people went home at last, and after attending Vespers in the now deserted church, we retired to bed in the guest house. Since there was no heating of any kind, it seemed the only thing to do. I slept soundly, but not my friend. Someone had locked the monastery dog in the refreshment room just below us, and he spent the night howling the place down. As she saw me off at the station next morning, my friend was full of apologies for the disappointing weekend. "It's not usually like that," she explained sadly. And I felt sorry for her sake that things had not gone the way she'd wanted for me. But peace and tranquility are not commodities to be bought over the counter, nor will any amount of ready-made atmosphere provide us with them, as many a would-be religious has discovered to his or her cost. The monastery itself has not always been a haven of peace. The Golden Age was in the 11th century, when St. Peter Damian, the swineherd-turned-university professor, joined the hermit monks, and by his holiness and learning brought fame to Fonte Avellana, which soon became the centre of a monastic congregation known as the Avellanites. Though elected prior, Peter Damian was not allowed to live out the rest of his life in holy solitude, but was made Cardinal Bishop of Ostia and was frequently called upon by the popes to intervene in church matters, as we may read.
His time was devoted to vehement writing, preaching, and otherwise actively working against the clerical abuses of his time.
Around the year 1310, Dante was at Fonte Avellana, where he wrote a not inconsiderable part of the Divine Comedy. In this stanza from Canto 21 of the Paradiso, he portrays Peter Damian talking to him of the hermitage and lamenting the degenerate behaviour of the churchmen of the period.
"Between the coasts of Italy emerge those crags, not very distant from your land, so high that under them the thunders surge. They make a ridge called Catria. They stand, and there's a hermitage, hallowed and blessed, that formerly for prayer alone was planned."
Peter Damian, who died in 1072, was declared Doctor of the Church in 1828. But from that fountain of spirituality, as Pope John Paul II described it, Many were the saintly monks who made this place a hallowed spot. If we are to credit the records, Fonte Avellana gave the church 54 bishops, 4 cardinals, 4 popes, and no fewer than 76 saints. And their white procession, writes one, might well rival in number that of the devout pilgrims of ancient times. The traditional white habit with a hood is similar to that of the Benedictines, of whose order the Camaldolese are an independent shoot. For Camaldolese they have been, since Pius V suppressed the Avellanite congregation in 1569, because, it seems, the monks had refused his invitation to reform. Which brings us to more recent times, when once again the question of reform was on the agenda. In Tuscany, where the original Camaldolese still heads the order, the monks were busy changing their long white habits for the sober clergyman suit. But their brothers in Fonte Avellana had no time for such frivolity. "They call us the old fogies," Don Aliprando confided to me, and his radiant smile betrayed a celestial tranquillity. He and his fellows belong, I think, to that class of monk described by Dom Hubert van Zeller in The Benedictine Idea.
Monks are found to view the question of reform in different ways. The seasoned religious will tend to see it as the rusty turnstile through which we all at one time or another must want to pass. But he will be quite happy at having himself turned back in time. To him it represents an artificial device which does not so much introduce to the promised land as separate from it. He has so often seen monks getting stuck in that turnstile for good. He thinks of sound men wasted on a superficial cause, going round and round, with self leaning nearer the centre of it.
In 1958, an extraordinary invitation was received from the well-known American Trappist monk and writer of books of spirituality, Thomas Merton. Always drawn to the hermit life, Merton had been granted permission to build a hermit's cell in the precincts of his abbey of Gethsemane in Kentucky. In his letter, he invited the monks to found a hermitage in the United States. Politely, they explained that they would be unable to finance such a project. Merton's reply was significant. "Don't worry about the material side," he wrote. "We'll take care of that. Bring your interior life. That is what we need here." And so it was that New Camaldoli was built, in the Santa Lucia Mountains, bordering the Pacific coast. The material side was taken care of by a philanthropist. The monks brought the rest. When you go to Fonte Avellana, you mustn't be in a hurry. It's not enough merely to visit the church with its massive wooden crucifix hanging above the altar. The magnificent scriptorium, known as the Palatium Domini Prioris, Palace of the Lord Prior, where in past centuries the monks peered at their parchment manuscripts, carefully copying by hand the precious texts. Or the two libraries, the Dante with its 10,000 volumes, or that of the monks with 5,000. Take time to walk slowly through the cloister, which Peter Damian wanted to be the heart of the hermitage, antechamber of the church, as a preparation to prayer. Down then to the crypt, the most mystical point of the whole complex, writes one.
It seems to have been hewn out of a single gigantic rock of living stone. Here the stones themselves become prayer. Here you feel far from everything, beyond the world. Here you are in touch with God alone.
And now out again to walk in the woods, and maybe come with us to the little cemetery, hidden away among the trees. Lift the latch on the wooden gate, closing it behind you, and stand there a while among the simple graves. Here, only a short while ago, our dear friend was laid to rest among his fellows. Living things, the wildflowers and the birds, keep them company, these reasonable hermits, as they did in life. It's time to go. To leave this place of prayer and quietness. But we'll be back. Everyone comes back. It's that sort of place. Hospitality has always been characteristic of the Benedictine tradition, and at Fonte Avellana it's supreme. But surely you object this is in direct contrast to the hermit's ideal. Well, listen to what Henri Nouwen writes in The Way of the Heart.
Once a visitor said to a hermit, "Sorry for making you break your rule." But the monk answered, "My rule is to practice the virtue of hospitality towards those who come to see me and send them home in peace."
And if you look up above the door of the church, you'll see a carving of two doves drinking out of the same cup. It's the emblem of the Camaldolese, and it represents the active and the contemplative life, coexisting. How otherwise could these men vowed to solitude accept an invasion such as the one we witnessed on our last visit just as we were leaving? We were walking towards the car when a deafening roar shook the air, making the mountains resound all about us as some 50 or so enormous motorcycles stormed into the parking area. My immediate reaction as we stood there amazed was similar to that of the would-be hermit of long ago. "But it's marvellous," exclaimed my companion. And as we watched the enthusiastic company of young men and women descend from their machines and make their way noisily up to the main courtyard, I knew, of course, that she was right. If I were to choose one among the countless memories I have of this extraordinary place, it could only be that of a hot July night, a score and more years ago, when, tired out after the long drive from Rome, we came at last to the Hermitage. It was midnight, but there, waiting for us at the monastery gates, was our old friend, his face beaming with delight, his arms outstretched in welcome. This, then, dear pilgrim, is Fonte Avellana.
Heartfelt thanks there to Jill Bevilacqua for bringing alive to us this holy place in such a beautifully personal manner. Many thanks also to Sean Patrick Lovett, whose voice you've just heard. Thanks for joining me. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.